Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemelman of First City Church and our special guest Hannah, who you will meet here in just a moment. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life, and today we're talking about the untold story of prenatal testing. But first, I'm eating potato salad at 3:30 in the afternoon because somebody brought snacks.
Yeah.
We brought barbecue snacks.
Yeah, this is beyond snacks.
Yeah, this is like a meal. Dinner. Yeah, pre-dinner.
Yeah.
On episode 527 of the Wednesday Conversation, I made the comment that there is no good barbecue in Omaha, Nebraska. And Brian, who's one of our listeners, emailed me and asked, hey, did you mean that when you said that? And I said, yes, absolutely, I did.
I mean everything I say, Brian.
And so now here's what I appreciate. Brian obviously disagrees with me. He thinks there is good barbecue in Omaha. So he brought us some, basically said, here is my demonstrative proof that there is good barbecue in Omaha. And so he brought us barbecue from, what is that, Chris? Jay's Smokehouse?
Jay's Smokehouse.
Jay's Smokehouse down on 96th and L Street, which I had never heard of, nor have I ever eaten their barbecue. Here's what I want to, well, first of all, this brings up two other debates. Number one, there's a listener, Sean, out there who you may remember from, I don't know, a year or two ago, believes that baked beans are all that matter when you're eating barbecue, which I think is still the worst take.
That's the telltale sign if it's good barbecue or not, is the baked beans.
That's literally the worst take ever. Yeah. And Sean, I just want to rebuke you. That's a terrible, it's so far from being true. I respect your, you know, your conviction on it, but it's just wrong. Here is what I would say. The way you know if barbecue is good is you go straight to the brisket. Anybody can do pulled pork. Most people can make a decent potato salad. I've never been to a small town potluck that didn't have a good potato salad. I mean, you know, the sides are like, whatever. Most people can do that. Well, the thing that's hard to do is smoke a good brisket or barbecued ribs. So I will say the brisket that I just ate was quite delicious.
It was good.
I'm trying to figure out if I'd be willing to modify my opinion that Omaha does have good barbecue, or I think I would just say, somebody in Omaha can make a good brisket. That's what I would say. That's what I would say right now. Yeah. I think I would stop short of saying this proves that Omaha has good barbecue. I just want to say, well, Jay's Smokehouse makes a good brisket.
Yeah, I wouldn't be embarrassed sending anybody to Jay's. Yeah. This is probably the best barbecue I've had in Omaha.
There you go.
Relatively speaking.
There you go.
But when you go have barbecue somewhere else, you realize the bar isn't very high.
Right.
So
is it fair to say that Omaha has good barbecue if it's just one good barbecue place? I don't know.
You got this one spot I'll send you where I won't feel embarrassed for sending you there.
But in Brian's favor, he's saying, well, I've just proved to you that, see, there is a good barbecue place in Omaha. So thank you. This is what I love about our listeners is they're competitive and rightly so. They want to step out and show us the good snacks. And so thank you, Brian, for contributing to this episode. Chris, you look like you were going to eat a piece of jalapeno sausage and then change your mind.
Yeah. You know, once we turned on the microphones, it's like, I don't know if I want to put meat in my mouth right now. So
yeah, that does.
I'll wait until we're done.
We are talking today, and actually I think this is going to end up being a two-part podcast. We're going to have one long conversation, but we might chop it into two episodes when it comes out on the podcast, because there's a lot to talk about here. And so we're going to talk about the subject of prenatal testing. This is a topic that has been on the radar for me as a pastor because of some experiences I've walked through with people in our church over especially the past 5 to 8 years. And so what happened was the New York Times published an article a while back that sort of put this on the radar in a really demonstrative way. And I want to read the introduction or a few paragraphs from that article to help you listeners enter into the topic. And there's some important questions here that I think Christians need to wrestle with, and just some important knowledge that Christians need to have as we continue to live in a world where the medical technology progresses quite fast and where we're being offered all kinds of options and services and information that we don't always know what to do with or how to respond to. Here's the New York Times piece is from January 1st, 2022. The headline is simply this: when they warn of rare disorders, these prenatal tests are usually wrong, which is a pretty arresting headline. But let me read to you the first few paragraphs of this article. After a year of fertility treatments, Yael Geller was thrilled when she found out she was pregnant in November 2020. Following a normal ultrasound, she was confident enough to tell her three-year-old son his brother or sister was in her belly. But a few weeks later, as she was driving her son home from school, her doctor's office called. A prenatal blood test indicated her fetus might be missing part of a chromosome, which could lead to serious ailments and mental illness. Sitting on the couch that evening with her husband, she cried. "How's this happening to me?" she recalled thinking. The next day, doctors used a long, painful needle to retrieve a small piece of her placenta. It was tested and showed the initial result was wrong. She now has a six-month-old, Emmanuel, who shows no signs of the condition he screened positive for. Ms. Geller had been misled by a wondrous promise that Silicon Valley technology has made to expectant mothers, that a few vials of their blood drawn in the first trimester can allow companies to detect serious developmental problems in the DNA of the fetus with remarkable accuracy. In just over a decade, the tests have gone from laboratory experiments to an industry that serves more than a third of the pregnant women in America, luring major companies like LabCorp and Quest Diagnostics into the business alongside many startups. The tests initially looked for Down syndrome and worked very well, but as manufacturers tried to outsell each other, they began offering additional screenings for increasingly rare conditions. The grave predictions made by those newer tests are usually wrong, an examination by the New York Times has found. Nonetheless, on product brochures, companies describe the tests to pregnant women and their doctors as near certain. They advertise their findings as reliable and highly accurate. However, the technology known as non-invasive prenatal testing, or NIPT, performs much worse than advertised. To evaluate the newer test, the Times interviewed researchers and then combined data from multiple studies to produce the best estimates available of how well the five most common microdeletion tests perform. The analysis showed that positive results on those tests are incorrect about 85% of the time. Let me read that again. Positive results on these tests are incorrect 85% of the time. Now, this is specifically for the microdeletion tests, which is a testing for particular chromosomal abnormalities. But when I read that paragraph in the New York Times, it shocked me because what it's telling you is only 15% of the time is a positive result in this test actually going to mean something. 85% of the time, a positive result is wrong. And I was shocked that that's the case and that there's that big of a discrepancy. And what happened when I read this article was I thought about half a dozen experiences I've had as a pastor with a couple in our church who's come and said, "Hey, we had this test and they're telling us something's wrong with the baby." And it's really shocking and scary. And then realizing like this is happening a lot and it turns out there's nothing wrong. And so what I did after I read this article and was thinking about doing this topic is I put it out to our church in a weekly email and just said, "Hey, have any of you had experiences with this?" And got a bunch of responses back from various people. And you're going to hear today from Hannah, who's our guest on the podcast, who's one of those people. I also have a long email from a pediatric doctor in our church who basically wrote me and said, "Hey, let me give you a doctor's perspective on these tests and what they do and don't do and how I feel as a doctor about, you know, using them." So we're going to get to that as well. But first, I want to introduce you to Hannah. Hannah, thank you for sitting through our barbecue review before even getting to speak in the microphone, but really appreciate you taking time to join us today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. It smells good.
So. Exactly. You haven't eaten any of the brisket yet, but
no.
Perhaps that's just because you want to be more clear-headed than Chris and I for this this part of the conversation. I really appreciate you being willing to come on, and you had a personal experience with this in the past year. And yes. So I would love for you just to basically tell your story. You went through some of this testing, and I'd love to hear just from your first person experience, your story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. So my husband and I were trying for a while, and last August we found out that I was pregnant, and we were overjoyed. It was the best news ever. And we actually found out that I was pregnant the week before we moved here to Omaha. And so then we moved to Omaha, and I start seeing a new doctor and had a really great experience to begin with. I went to my 8-week appointment. Everything looked great. We were just so thankful. And in the first couple appointments, they mentioned this thing called NIPT testing, and I hadn't heard about it. And so I reached out to some of my friends who had had babies, and some of them did the testing, some of them didn't. I didn't really think that much of it. And then I forget which appointment it was. It was maybe my 12-week appointment. They brought it up again. And I was like, I'll go home and talk to my husband about it. And so we did. We prayed about it, and we didn't make the decision lightly. We were very intentional and thoughtful in it. And we did some more research, and we're like, well, it's just, you know, we have good insurance. Our insurance covers it, because it can be a very expensive test. And it's just a blood draw from me, so it doesn't like affect the baby. And then we were like, you know, actually we could like spin this to be a very pro-life thing, because we could name our baby and announce it on Christmas cards. Like, that was our plan. And looking back, part of it was also probably our impatience in knowing the gender. Like, we really wanted to know the gender. We were so excited, and we wanted to pick out a name and call our baby his or her name throughout the whole pregnancy. We wanted to humanize this child inside of me. And we have no genetic disorders in our family, so we really just thought we were going to find out the gender early. And so then I just went through the test. And I actually had to get my blood drawn twice, because the first time, it got messed up at the lab. So I went back in, they did it again. So it was like delayed a few weeks. And I had started a new job, and it was the first day of my job, and it was that afternoon. And I remember them saying, like, if everything's fine, like, whatever, you'll just get an email about it, and you'll log on to your little portal, and it will show the gender. And if something's abnormal, we'll call you. And I remember seeing that phone number pop up right in those couple days that I was expecting to get our results, and like my stomach dropped. And it was the first day of this new job. And so I answered, and my doctor, like, her tone right away, I just knew something was wrong. And she said, I have the genetic results back, and the results will tell you the gender. Is it okay if I tell you the gender? And I was like, yeah. And she said, I'm so sorry, but your baby screened positive for Turner syndrome. And I felt like the world just stopped. I was so shook. I was so caught off guard. And I didn't know anything about Turner syndrome. And so I just started asking her a ton of questions. And so Turner syndrome is when the baby has one X chromosome instead of two. And I started asking her about the test and the accuracy, and she said that the accuracy rate's a little over 70%. And so I remember I kept asking her, like, so, like, you're for sure? And she was like, and she just kept saying that the test has an accuracy rate of a little over 70%. And so I was just like, okay, what are the next steps? And she said that they would set us up with a genetics counselor. And if we wanted, we could do invasive testing, which would be where they take a part of the fetal tissue And that's where they can basically know for sure. And I was like, okay, I just need to talk to my husband. And so got off the phone with her. I called my husband immediately and was just bawling to him. I was so scared. It was such a shock. And he was at work and, yeah. And so then we scheduled our follow-up appointments. And we met with the Gen X counselor a week later. And they also scheduled an ultrasound for a week later. So at this point, I was about 15, 16 weeks along. And it was going to be a very in-depth ultrasound. So like over an hour long. And so it was that week before we really had any answers. And I mean, it was basically, it felt like they just dropped this big news on you. And then we're just let you like be. There wasn't much support in the meantime. And it was just kind of like your baby screened positive for this genetic disorder. We'll see you next time. And so that week was just heavy. It was really heavy and a lot of tears and a lot of fear. And I just remember dropping to my knees crying and just thinking, this is where the rubber meets the road. Like, this is where we exercise our faith muscles, because we know our God is good and we know that he's faithful and we know that his will is better than our will. And we know that he loves babies. And it was just my husband and I repeating these truths to each other throughout this week. And just submitting everything to him, because it was so outside of our control. There was nothing we could do, regardless of the accuracy of the test results. And so then we met with a genetics counselor the following week. And she was really nice. She was nice, but she gave us these like general statistics. And what we were most fearful of course, was that we were going to lose our baby, because there can be some serious heart defects that happen with kiddos who have Turner syndrome. And so we were just nervous about the health of our baby. And I remember her talking about the rate of miscarriage for babies that have screen positive for Turner syndrome. And it was a very high percentage for the first 12 weeks. And I remember saying to her, but our baby's 15 or 16 weeks. So that statistic doesn't apply to us, right? And she was like, yeah, I guess so. And it felt like they weren't hearing our specific situation and we're just treating it like our situation, like our baby for sure had Turner syndrome and our baby was going to have these serious health problems. And we made it very clear from the get-go, like our baby is safe with us. And they never flat out said that this could be a reason why they would maybe encourage someone to terminate the pregnancy. But they got real close multiple times. And I was very firm with the genetics counselor and in follow-up appointments. So that our baby was a gift from God, and that she was a blessing regardless of any health defect or genetic disorder. And so I don't think they pushed it, because I made our position very clear.
Do you think if you hadn't, do you suspect they give indication that they might have pushed that, or
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was an option. Like, they treated it as an option. The genetics counselor suggested that this is a reason why people choose to terminate their pregnancies.
Wow.
And I made it very clear to her that that was never going to be an option for us. And so we had our in-depth ultrasound that same day. And this was with the maternal fetal medicine doctors. And the ultrasound showed no signs of Turner syndrome. She was small, but I was a small baby, and so that it wasn't anything super concerning. But her heart looked great. She looked perfectly healthy for a baby at that stage. And the maternal fetal medicine doctor came in, and he was so encouraging. Like, he walked in the room, and the first thing he said was, he said, he used the word perfect, in that she looked perfect for a baby at that stage. And he went through all the measurements, and he said, yep, she looks great. Her heart looks great. There are certain markers that they look for on the hands and the heart and the head and the back of the neck. There can be a skin fold that is bigger for babies that have Turner syndrome. She showed no signs of that. And so he told us, he's like, relax. He said, just focus on the joy of your pregnancy. There's nothing to be worried about at this point. And they suggested growth ultrasounds every 4 weeks after that. And so in this conversation, my husband and I were just, I mean, it felt like whiplash. And we asked him, okay, so I basically asked him bluntly, I was like, so do you think our baby has Turner syndrome? And he said, probably not. At this rate, we'd probably, your baby's far enough along that we would see markers at this point. And this was, yeah, 15 or 16 weeks. And even if she does have Turner syndrome, it would probably be a very minor case of Turner syndrome. And so we asked him, what is the accuracy rate of these tests? And he said, it depends on the different genetic disorder that you're looking at. But for the sex chromosome disorders, he said that, I mean, it was a little higher than from the article that you said. He said he would say around 20 to 30% accuracy rate. And we said, well, they told us that it was a 70% accuracy rate. And he said, yeah, that's not right. And so then we asked him, with such a low accuracy rate, do you recommend that people do these tests? And I will never forget this. He said, yes, because it changes some people's minds about their pregnancies. So again, he didn't flat out say the word abortion, and he didn't say terminate the pregnancy, but that's exactly what he implied. And we were just shocked, because in the same conversation, he said how inaccurate they were, but then he also said they could be a legitimate justification for someone to end their pregnancy, even though they're not accurate. So that caught us off guard. And so then from that point on, we were just kind of like, we didn't really trust the test, but it cast a shadow over our pregnancy. And that was sad, because they treated us as if our baby for sure had this genetic disorder. And the tone that they used every single time was like, there was a problem with our baby, or there was something terrible going on. And at that, like, as the pregnancy went on, we knew that our baby was safe with me, whether or not she made it to full term. And our baby was made in the image of God. He formed her in my womb. And just even if she had Turner syndrome, it doesn't mean something was wrong with her. She had value and dignity. And when you're carrying a child and you see them on the ultrasound, to have a medical professional tell you at the same time that there's this really, like, weighty, dark, heavy, sad thing with your child, it really steals the joy. So we had to fight for that joy through the Lord, through God's grace, through wonderful community, through prayer. And as our pregnancy went on, it felt like we had more and more faith that our baby, that we would get to hold our baby. I have a good family friend where the same exact thing happened to them. Their baby screened positive for Turner syndrome, and she was born completely healthy. I have a coworker who had a friend, same exact thing happened. And so we kept hearing about these stories where the babies were healthy. And so we had more and more faith that we would get to hold our baby. We had the elders pray for us, and we don't know if our baby actually had Turner syndrome or if the test had a false positive, or if God gave her another X chromosome in my womb, because we prayed for that and he can do that. And we'll never know for sure. Anyways, so they offered, as the pregnancy went along, they offered invasive testing, and we declined that every single time. And we just had faith that regardless of our baby's health, we would love her so, so, so much. We already did love her so much. And when I was talking to one of my friends about our situation, another sister in Christ, she said, "Hannah, praise God that this happened, that this situation happened to you and Marcus and not another couple, because you know that your baby is safe with you, and you know that you would never end this pregnancy." And so that was a really good perspective to hear. And also, you know, we're grateful for that season because we couldn't control anything. And so we give it up to the Lord. And it was a really good exercise in our faith. And so we had our baby girl at the end of August. We had our baby girl at the end of April. And we delayed her blood testing for a few weeks. But she had a healthy birth. And we eventually got her blood tested, and she does not have Turner syndrome. And she's perfectly healthy in every single way. And she is such a blessing. And again, we don't know if it was a false positive or if God gave her another X chromosome while she was in my womb. But either way, we're just thankful that she is healthy. In that she has a healthy heart, but regardless, she's a human being worthy of protection and love. Yeah, we're just thankful for the church's support during that time and the elders' care and prayer. And we know that that the Lord is so faithful. He's so good. He's so faithful.
Thanks for sharing your story. What concerns do you have for other young moms who are facing these same kinds of things? Like going through what you went through, you think about your friends and people in our church, what sort of concerns you about just the journey?
When they offer the NIPT test, they make it seem so casual, so easy. Like there's no big deal. You can find out the gender of your baby early. And for most people, that is probably the case. But for a lot of people, that is not the case. And so they market it essentially as this easy test, but it has really heavy ramifications for enough people that it's problematic, because basically you're just dropping this bomb on parents so early on in their pregnancy that their baby could have a genetic disorder. And it's not just the fact that your baby might have a genetic disorder. It's that your baby might not make it to full term. And so this also happens very early on in pregnancy where you're already nervous about miscarriages. So I think it feels like a bait and switch. It feels like there's this easy test, but then you get hit with some really heavy, serious news. And then it's not even true most of the time. So it's a whiplash during pregnancy where stress is like the worst thing. So that's part of it. And then another concern I have is that the way that we were treated was that there was something wrong with our baby, in that essentially our baby may or may not be worthy of life. And so without the genetic testing, you know, you have people will have their babies and they might have these disorders, but there's no thought that they're not deserving of life. But essentially you're saying, you're testing, you're screening early on and you're saying, well, if this baby has this certain health issue, then they do not deserve to be born. And that's so wrong in so many ways. And it, again, I think it was so casually explained in those options offered that I think a lot of moms need to be prepared for when they walk into the doctor's office. They should already think about whether or not they want to do the NIPT test, because it's just brought up like any other thing that, you know, that any other option. So they, moms should think about that beforehand. And then even when they're getting results, they should be prepared for false positives and be prepared for how they want to communicate with their medical team about those, because if they don't take the initiative to make their position known that they cherish life and they cherish their baby inside of them, then their medical team will offer the option to terminate their child based on a test that is incorrectly positive a lot of the time.
I wanted to read from this New York Times article a few data points that I think are helpful. And the reason I wanted to talk about this topic on the podcast is because of exactly what you said, which is according to this article, and not just the New York Times, by the way, but this has been reported in some similar studies in other places, these tests are wrong 85% of the time. And so I just think couples need to know that, because we just trust our medical professionals because they're the experts. And so when you walk in and somebody says, hey, this test shows X, and you're not told, and it's wrong 85% of the time, it feels dramatic and scary. Yes. And like it's true just because someone says it. And actually the data shows there's a huge problem with these tests. But here's the nuance of the test is that all the screenings run on the same blood draw, but you just opt into which tests you want. So the way the article describes it is the base screening is basically what gender is the baby. They can add the microdeletion testing, all of which are very unreliable, but they're going to come back with all kinds of results from that and make phone calls like they made to you that actually are based on really, really poor, flimsy data. So I just want young couples to know this fact so that we have this in our decision-making grid as we're hearing these things and as we're walking into community and saying, hey, here's what our doctors have said, or here's what tests are showing. What should we do with that information and how do we process that?
Can I add one more thing?
Yeah.
I forgot this part of our story. So after our baby was born, we waited a couple of weeks to do her blood draw because she was so little and the test required a bigger amount of blood. And so we got the results back and the results were sent to our pediatrician. And so our pediatrician got the results and called us. And at that point, if we wouldn't have said anything to our doctor, like my doctors, they would have never known that it was a false positive. So when we got the results, I messaged my OB, my nurse practitioner, the couple maternal fetal medicine doctors that we worked with, just so they knew that it was a false positive, because otherwise they might not be hearing these stories, because once the baby's born and is tested after the fact, they might not ever hear again whether or not that baby actually had the genetic disorder. And so I messaged them, and only one of them responded.
I was going to say, were they surprised?
I don't know if I would say surprised, but like my message was decently lengthy.
I would have just been, hey, you were wrong.
And they were, I will say, they were very empathetic. And, you know, I think from their perspective, they were trying to be overly conservative, because from their perspective, if they were wrong, then there was nothing lost, which obviously from our perspective, that's not true, because we go through a whole pregnancy with a very heavy fear. But yeah, they were just kind of like, oh, great. at my follow-up appointment, when I saw them in person, one of them, they were like, oh, great. And another one, I don't have any more appointments with her. So I never heard back. So
we're going to break the podcast here and continue the conversation next week. There's much more to talk about here, and I want to get to a couple more stories similar to Hannah's, and to the feedback of a doctor who gave us a doctor's perspective on these tests, and I think gives us an additional set of things for Christians to think through. So I want us to think about these things, because I realize listeners to this podcast are in both camps. There's a lot of couples and pregnant moms and people who want to get pregnant, have kids in the future, that need to hear this. There's also a huge medical community that listens to this podcast. And so those of you who are practicing medicine, I think there's some takeaways for you here in terms of how you hear a Christian doctor's perspective on how to practice this from the clinician side of things. So we're going to get to all that next week. I hope you'll come back next week and listen to the conclusion of this conversation. So Hannah, you're not going anywhere, but our listeners are. So thanks for helping us with this episode, and we'll see you again next week for round two.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.